Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sports Talk Chicago's 19th podcast. My name's John Zagluel, owner and operator of the site. Today we have a lot to get to, including a very special guest, but first, just a few quick announcements. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at ShyTalkSports. Also, hit me up personally on Google+, Instagram, and LinkedIn, all at John Zags. And finally, if you're looking for a place down the road, very local, to get gifts and other sorts of apparel, make sure to go to Moochie World, a peculiar place, gift shop, and more, located at the Tinley Park Down Shopping Center. Their address is 7913 171st Street in Tinley Park, Illinois. You can call them by calling the number 773-796-8224. Again, that's 773-796-8224. And today we're going to start off by talking about the Chicago Cubs and what a year they are having, currently 88-48, 16.5 games over the St. Louis Cardinals in the NL Central. Their magic number to clinch is 11, so they're getting close. And what a game it was the other day, where Jason Hayward delivered a walk-off single to win the game. In that game, by the way, went 3-for-6 with 3 RBIs, looking like the Jason Hayward of old, and more importantly, playing like he is capable of playing. And something that stood out to me, first of all, great start by John Lackey coming off the DL, 5 innings, 2 runs, one of which were earned, but a great effort by the bullpen. The Cubs used 7 pitchers out of the bullpen after Lackey came out of the game, and each one of them shut the door, from Zastrinzi to Smith, Wood, Edwards, Chapman, Grimm, and finally Cahill to come on for the big W. And the bullpen had been a key point for Theo Epstein and company regarding the trade deadline, obviously with the acquisitions of players like Mike Montgomery and Joe Smith. Turns out those acquisitions have been paying off, and I featured a piece on the bullpen and the Cubs pitching staff as a whole in my latest article called Cubtober Cannot Come Soon Enough. And a stat that really stood out to me, first of all, is that including all relief pitchers and starting pitchers, the Cubs boast a team ERA at 3.11, which outpaces the rest of the league by more than 0.30 runs. Now, in the article, I had a paragraph in there regarding the bullpen, mentioned 3 names, and I started with Aroldis Chapman. As I mentioned before, he has been the first shutdown closer in franchise history since Randy Myers back in the 1990s. Chapman has recorded 12 saves since his acquisition at the trade deadline and has a 1.62 ERA. His strikeouts per 9 innings rate at 15.7. Someone else to look out for, Hector Rondon, whose ERA has stayed well below the 3.0 mark. Strikeout totals also exceed the amount of innings pitched, and I really have to give credit to him where credit is due. Rondon was the shutdown closer on this team, but once the Cubs acquired Aroldis Chapman, he was forced to slide into a setup role. And instead of maybe in the past, like Drew Storen and the Jonathan Papelbon saga in 2015 for the Nationals, Rondon took this move in stride. He decided to embrace his new role with the team, and he has done such a great job and should be considered one of the best and most effective setup men in the game, considering he was such an effective closer. I mean, last season, ERA under 2.0. Finally, I want to talk about Trevor Cahill for a minute, a guy who was actually a Cy Young candidate back in 2010 with the Oakland A's. I mean, he went 18-8 with an ERA under 3.0. Now, the year after that, however, he went 12-14 with a 4.16, and his career really took a downturn. And by 2014, he was a starter and a reliever, going 3-12 with a 5.61 ERA. Then he came to the Cubs, and his whole repertoire was reinvented thanks to the help of pitching coach Chris Bosio. He has found his home here in Chicago, as last season with the Cubs, he had a 2.12 ERA in 11 appearances. This year, 4-4, 2.68 ERA in 42 games. That's including one start, which was actually about 2 weeks ago, in which he went 5 scoreless innings to get the win. So Trevor Cahill, as I mentioned in the article, has had a role in which he has worn various different hats. I mean, this guy has been a setup man at one point, has been a middle reliever and a starter, and he has found ways in each of those roles to succeed. And there was some talk the other day. I saw an article on ESPN.com talking about how there are going to be some very tough decisions to be made about the Cubs and the playoff roster. And all I have to say is this. If there's one guy on the team who has certainly earned a spot to be on that postseason roster, it is Trevor Cahill. Again, a very valuable player, can do multiple things, can perform in multiple different situations. Somebody the Cubs should very much consider to be on that roster. We're going to move on now and talk about the Chicago White Sox and the struggles they have been going through these past couple of weeks. Now, the Sox are currently 65-71 in fourth place in the AL Central, 14.5 games out of the lead. But when you look at them in the wild card standings, they are 9 games back. And it's pretty funny, actually. I was talking to a Sox fan I know the other day, and he was telling me that it's not over till it's over. That is true. The White Sox are at an elimination number of 18, so they are still mathematically in the race, although they would have a lot of catching up to do, and they need a lot of help from teams like the Astros, the Yankees, and the Royals. Now, to start this segment, I'm going to read off a slash line, which is a batting average, a slugging percentage, and an on-base percentage, and I want you to guess who the hitter may be. 298, 371, 549. Now, before you start guessing, I'd like to let you know that it isn't a hitter. This is the slash line that James Shields has when it comes to batters against. For you statistic nuts out there, I should mention that this slash line is very close to the slash line that Anthony Rizzo has this year. So this just goes to show how successful hitters have been off of James Shields this season. And that goes back to the fact that the White Sox are weak with starting pitching. Now, I should say that I don't want to discredit certain players on the team. For example, Chris Sale has continued his dominance with an ERA of 3.10. Jose Quintana, meanwhile, has an 11-10 record, but don't let that fool you. His ERA is actually better than Sale's at 3.05. So those two have done great at the top of the rotation. Someone else who has really emerged in the second half is Carlos Rodon, who now sports an ERA under 4.0, and he's 6-8 on the year. So those three have been bright spots in an otherwise dismal starting rotation for the Sox. Specifically, a player who has really struggled since coming to the Sox recently is starting pitcher Anthony Rinaldo, and he started the other day against the Twins, gave up 9 earned runs, but ended up with a no decision. His ERA on the year is at 10.13, and it's at 9.12 with the Sox through 5 starts. That just goes to show you how desperate the team is for starting pitching. And the one suggestion I would make is that just get 2 quality starting pitchers. Obviously, you have your innings eaters up at the top with Quintana and Rodon and Sale. Just get 2 guys who could fill the void well, and you'd be okay. And the Sox would have an entirely different season if they just had some quality starting pitching, but unfortunately, it just hasn't been there. And one final note comes from me, and I just want to set the record straight on Todd Frazier's performance this year. Now, some people believe it has been good. Hey, he's hit 35 home runs, he has 86 RBIs. This guy's the guy. Others have said no due to the fact that he's only hitting 217. Now, my side in that argument is that no, he's not had a good season, and I'll tell you why right away. And I heard this opinion on MLB Network. It has to do with the fact that since that home run derby that Todd Frazier participated in with Cincinnati, in which he won it, his batting average has plummeted. Last season after the home run derby in the second half, I believe he batted less than 250. This year at 217, it's simply because he's just trying to hit home runs. It's going to be a home run, a walk, or a strikeout when it comes to Todd Frazier and his at-bats. And this is quite disappointing for me. I mean, 2 years ago, as a 2014 All-Star, 28-year-old with Cincinnati, the guy still hit 29 home runs at 80 RBIs, 20 stolen bases, and batted 273. And now this year, 35 home runs, sure, that's nice, but a 217 batting average, a 301 on base percentage, and a slugging percentage less than 500 isn't going to cut it. And according to his OPS plus statistic, which measures how well his OPS is with adjustment to the various ballparks he plays in, he's barely above league average. The league average at 100, Frazier at 105. So again, Those who say that Todd Frazier's had a great year, you could believe what you want to believe. I mean, the 35 home runs aren't quite an eye-popping statistic. However, I look beyond the glitz and the glamour of the home run and the RBI and take a look at what kind of a player Todd Frazier really is. And according to these stats that I've dug up, he's nothing but an average player for the White Sox. And with that, we're going to move on now and talk about some Chicago Bulls news. I'd like to begin on a solemn note, as a horrific event occurred that has truly shocked the Chicago Bulls community. Dwayne Wade's cousin, Nakia Aldridge, was shot down in Chicago about 3 weeks ago, and she later died due to her wounds. I just want to send my personal condolences to the Wade family. Here's the official statement released by the Chicago Bulls, quote, "The entire Chicago Bulls organization is deeply saddened by the news of Dwayne Wade's cousin, Nakia Aldridge. We send our deepest condolences to the entire Wade family during this difficult time." Wade appeared on ABC News and reminisced about his cousin and also had a message for the Chicago community asking for the gun violence to end. Again, everyone here at SportsTalkChicago.com sends their deepest condolences to the Wade family on the tragic passing of Nakia Aldridge. In other Bulls news, some pretty exciting stuff, as the 2016-17 NBA schedules have been released and the Bulls have been paired up to face Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah against the Knicks at the United Center on November 4th. On November 10th, Dwayne Wade will return to Miami as the Bulls take on the Heat. March 2nd will pit the Bulls against the Golden State Warriors after their acquisition of Kevin Durant. On December 2nd, the Bulls will host the defending champion Cleveland Cavaliers. Now, on Christmas, the Bulls do face the San Antonio Spurs, which is where Pau Gasol has gone, and also another big matchup. As the Bulls travel to Minnesota to face the Timberwolves on December 13th, that'll be the first game in which the Bulls face off against former coach Tom Thibodeau. You can catch the first Chicago Bulls preseason game on October 3rd at 7 p.m. as the Milwaukee Bucks make their way to town to play in the United Center. Finally, we're going to move on now to the Chicago Blackhawks. With the World Cup of Hockey approaching this month, Jonathan Toews has been named the alternate captain of Team Canada. Sidney Crosby is the captain of that team. Here's some information on the World Cup of Hockey. 8 teams, Team Canada, Team Czech Republic, Team Europe, Team Finland, Team North America, Team Russia, Team Sweden, and Team USA will compete in the 2-week tournament featuring more than 170 of the best players in the NHL. All tournament games will be played at the Air Canada Center in Toronto, current home of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Unfortunately, Duncan Keith will not be able to participate in the World Cup. Here's a statement from Blackhawks head team physician, Dr. Michael Terry. Quote, "As Duncan continues off-season rehabilitation on the right knee injury that he sustained last season, we understand his decision not to participate in next month's World Cup of Hockey. We believe it is in his best interest to focus on getting stronger and not risk further injury." On another note, the 2016-17 schedule has been released for the Blackhawks. One of the big games this year will be outdoors again, this time on January 2nd at Busch Stadium when the Hawks take on the Blues. And an interesting point was made by Harvey Wittenberg, who wrote an article regarding the Hawks' schedule. They're going to have to start off the season hot because as of March 25th, the Blackhawks will contest 3 in a row on the road against teams that made the playoffs, Florida, Tampa Bay, and Pittsburgh. Their last 8 games, 6 of them will be on the road and only 2 at the United Center. So again, the Hawks are going to have to get off to a very good start this year, so that way in case trouble hits them and the latter part of their schedule, it will not hurt them as far as the playoff chase goes. We are nearly 1 month away as opening night for the Hawks is on October 12th as they take on the St. Louis Blues. Good luck to them. Finally, we're going to move on to some Chicago Bears news, and luckily enough, our special guest does know a lot about them. Let's talk about him for a minute. He's a 2-time NFC Pro Bowler, along with a 1-time NFL First Team All-Pro. He has made it to the Super Bowl twice, Super Bowl 41 with the Chicago Bears, and most recently, Super Bowl 50 with the Carolina Panthers in his last year as an NFL player. He has won the prestigious Walter Payton Man of the Year Award for his charitable work off the field, and he is the inventor of the Peanut Punch. Please welcome Charles Peanut Tillman to the show. So, hello everybody, we are back here on the show today with Charles Tillman. Charles, how are you doing today, and thank you for being on the show.
Hey, what's going on? How you doing?
Doing great. Just, love what I'm doing here with Sports Talk Chicago, and it's an honor to have you here. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, man. Glad to be a part of it.
So, first of all, Charles, I'd like to reflect on your career, specifically as a member of the Chicago Bears. Now, you made it to the Pro Bowl twice, recorded 36 interceptions, and got to play in Super Bowl 41. What was your best memory with the franchise, and how did it feel to be a valued member on the team?
Best memory? I'd probably say it had to be the 2006 season, more specifically when we played the Arizona Cardinals. I just remember that game being the ultimate game where you talk about team. That's what that game meant. And it's what it represented. You know, we were down 20 something points and, you know, we come back and we end up winning the game. Yeah, that's by far my greatest memory with the Chicago Bears.
So now, regarding Super Bowl 41, you recorded 11 tackles in the losing effort. Now, despite the loss, what were your thoughts on being able to play in the Super Bowl? Also, what went through your mind when Devin Hester returned that opening kickoff for a touchdown?
Well, my first thought was like, oh, we're going to win this game. That was the first thing I thought about. It's cool to play in the Super Bowl, but it's even worse to lose a Super Bowl. To this day, I've never watched that game. To this day, I still have yet to watch the entire Super Bowl 41 game. I just can't stomach it. It's too painful. Knowing that I was so close and I wasn't able to pull it off. So, yeah. Thanks for bringing that up, John. Now I'm all depressed again.
Sorry about that. So let's talk about the Peanut Punch for a moment. Now, you revolutionized and brought light to the forced fumble statistic throughout your career. Now, on November 4th, 2012, you set an NFL record by recording 4 forced fumbles in that one game. I happened to watch that game as well. It was quite a sight. So can you describe the idea behind your signature move? When did you first implement it? At the time you created it, did you imagine it would become one of the trademarks of your career?
Just me just trying to think outside the box, you know. I don't possess a lot of talent or anything like that. Oh, excuse me, I don't want to say talent. I don't possess like a lot of hard hitting. You know, I'm not a hard hitter like Brian Urlacher or Lance Briggs. You know, and just being different, thinking outside the box. I'm a small guy. I don't hit that hard, so you know what? I'm gonna just punch the football out. That might make it a little bit easier for me. You know, easier on my shoulders.
As a Bear, you led the franchise in career defensive touchdown returns and led all Bears cornerbacks in career interceptions. How does it feel to be considered one of the greatest defenders in Chicago Bears history?
Feels good, you know, considering that the team is very old and stoic. And, you know, to go down in history as one of the greatest defensive players, I'm honored with that, you know, with that compliment. You know, I think the Bears, historically, they were known for their defense. And to be mentioned with the rest of the other greats, it puts a smile on my face.
So, last season, you were able to play in 12 games with the Carolina Panthers, recording 2 interceptions and 2 forced fumbles before, unfortunately, tearing your ACL. Eventually, the team made it all the way to the Super Bowl, yet lost to the Denver Broncos. What were your thoughts on the season, considering you made meaningful contributions, yet you suffered a devastating injury?
It sucks. Like, you were to get kicked in the stomach or kicked in your gut. You're just like, oh, you know, it definitely takes the wind out of you. But the only saving grace, the only thing that really saved me, were my teammates. Is devastating as an injury of an ACL. I was happy that I had comfort, or my teammates comforted me, you know, I was mad. I didn't want to do nothing. And, you know, my teammates were the only ones that kind of kept me going. And it was something bigger than me. And it wasn't just about me. It was about our team. And we had something special, you know, last year in Carolina. And, you know, I think that's why you see our regular season record was 15-1. You know, because of the group of guys that we had in that locker room. Guys were playing for each other. Guys weren't playing to win a Super Bowl. Guys were playing to win a Super Bowl for their teammates. And I think that was something special.
So now, currently, the Bears are primed to start their season off this coming Sunday against the Tennessee Titans. Before the season, Sports Illustrated predicted the team would go 9-7 in 2016. Today, a report came out saying that the Bears have a 23% chance of making the playoffs. Do you find these predictions to be accurate, and what do you think, what are your thoughts on the 2016 Bears?
You know, I'm still doing my research. And I don't know if this will be the year for the Bears. You know, Minnesota was looking good, but, you know, Teddy Bridgewater just hurt his, he just had surgery today, here at me. People might say I'm crazy, but Green Bay, they're still a team to be reckoned with in the NFC North. And, you know, right now, I don't know if Chicago can pull it off with some of the guys that they have.
So I just wanted to shift to more of your off-the-field life. Can you give us a description of the Cornerstone Foundation and how it helps to improve the lives of the critically ill children in Chicago?
Well, we do different programs. You know, I'd probably say one of my favorite programs is we have Charles' Locker. And, you know, inside a lot of the greater Chicago area, we have these lockers set up with electronic devices, iPad, PlayStation, Xbox. We have different gaming systems, Nooks, for these kids and their families, laptops, to basically feel as if they're not in the hospital. Just something to let the time go by and really, you can really focus on, you know, just zoning out for a couple of hours. You know, those are one of my favorite things. We have another one called Piano Fun where it's we give out grants to families depending on what their greatest need is that they might need help with. You know, the Cornerstone Foundation, we're able to come in and help out and assist them with, you know, some type of a bill or a fee or a car or a mortgage or whatever. You know, we're able to come in and help them out.
That's great to hear. Now, as a child, your father was a sergeant in the U.S. Army, meaning that your family traveled frequently. And you attended 11 different schools as a kid, which must have been stressful. How were you able to consistently travel, and how did you cope with moving from school to school on a regular basis?
You know what? I only moved, I think, out of all the schools that I've done or that we did, I only disliked two schools. And other than that, I had a blast moving every 2 years, switching schools all the time. I don't really think it was stressful, but the two times that I was stressed out, I just relied on my brother, you know, my mom, you know, my inner circle, my family. I think they truly can help me. They got me through, they got me through my tough time.
So finally, final question here. You were selected as the Walter Payton Man of the Year in 2013, which recognizes a player's off-the-field community service as well as playing excellence. What is the significance of this award to you, especially since you won it as a Chicago Bear?
Huge significance. You know, with the award being named after Walter Payton and then me playing for the Chicago Bears, it means everything. Now, you asked me earlier what was my best memory, playing with the Bears. Winning the Walter Payton Man of the Year award was my best football memory off the field. You know, and the way I won it, the way it was presented to me, Radio City Music Hall in New York, 2013, like it was just this, it was like a fairy tale moment. It just didn't even seem real. And an amazing award, and to have it named after Walter being in Chicago and what he stood for, you know, his name has so much meaning in Chicago. And now that I get to be associated with that, you know, I think that's pretty cool. And just all the charity work that our foundation has done, you know, I'm very happy to help people and you know, use my service for just to help other people. Just serving. That's why we're here, man. Just using my strength for service and not that.
All right. Thank you so much, Charles. I really appreciate you being on the show. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Charles, take it easy, man. Good luck with your show. I hope you bring in millions with this podcast.
Thank you. And once again, I'd really like to thank Charles Silman for taking time out of his day to be on the show. Charles, really appreciate it. It was a very fun interview. And again, we're going to move on now to our final closing segments, starting with the odd sports story of the day. And this one comes from Major League Baseball. Indians pitcher Zach McAllister caught a line drive last week off of his leg. So here's what happened. McAllister was pitching, and as he pitched the ball, there was a comebacker hit right back at him. So the natural reaction, which is what McAllister did, was to move out of the way, turn his back to the play. Well, in the process, the ball ended up hitting off of McAllister's Achilles. It went up into the air, and he turned around and caught it for an out. It was quite a miraculous play. It went viral for a few days and could still be found now. I'm sure if you just look up Zach McAllister kick, you'll be able to find it on YouTube or MLB.com. So now we're going to move on to our punchline of the day segment. This joke regards the Bears since their season will be starting up this Sunday. So here's the question. What do the Bears and the post office have in common? The answer, they can never deliver on Sundays. Oh, so again, that is your punchline of the day segment. And finally, we're going to move on now to our announcer's call of the day segment. And since Charles Tillman joined me on the podcast today, let's get a highlight of his from his playing career. Now, with Tillman's retirement, the Chicago Bears on YouTube made a montage of his five best plays in a Bears uniform. Coming in at number five, which was probably one of the more impressive feats, is that Tillman recorded a pick six in two straight games. Here's the call from Jeff Joniak on WBBM 780.
Bears go nickel, one safety deep. Here's a quick throw, oh! Right in the hands of Charles Tillman. 20, 15, 10, 5, end zone! Pick six, touchdown! Touchdown Bears! Peanut Tillman does it again!
Snap, Bears rush four. Pockets are cool, throws, intercepted. Peanut Tillman running it back. It's a reverse scan of the 20, to the 10, to the 5, and so, touchdown! Touchdown Bears! Peanut Tillman, back to back!
And again, what a feat accomplished there by Peanut Tillman, recording two pick sixes 2 weeks in a row for the Chicago Bears. Well, that's it for us today on Sports Talk Chicago. I hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you all for listening. Just a few quick announcements. Again, make sure to follow us on Twitter, at ShyTalkSports, and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram, all at John Zags. Remember that this coming weekend, the NFL begins once again. The Bears play at noon on Sunday against the Tennessee Titans. Make sure to check that game out. Thank you, and have a great day from us here at SportsTalkChicago.com.